Hello and welcome once again to Crazy Comics and Stories. It's me, your charming and delightful old Uncle Rap Bastard. And at the other end of the series of tubes and wires that we call the internets is Joe, Crazy Writer. How you doing today, Joe?
I'm just floating in the interwebs. I'm floating, free falling. I don't want to get any more. I'm tired of getting sued.
What? You want to get sued?
Yeah. Shh. I know. It's like when I'm at work and come on down. Whoops. Can't say that too loud. Don't want Drew Carey mad at me again.
I say that when I do meds at the group home. I will usually, you know, because they all watch, if you let them, they'll watch game shows all day. So it's, you know, Bob, time for your meds. Come on down. You're the next contestant on. Take your medication.
Oh, make it fun. And because I always, people are like, how you doing? I say, well, I say I'm all right, but really, I just want to go to a comic book store.
I do not get to have the, what is it? I used to call it the weekend morning dance party for medication.
Oh.
Because now we give the medications out, you know, in the living room and everything. But it used to be when we were in the old buildings, there was a medication room and we'd have the clients come in one at a time and I would have the radio playing, usually a Sirius XM underground garage. So it would be, you know, garage rock sort of thing. And I would always call it the medication dance party because I would be, you know, bopping to the music.
Well, if it works.
Some of the clients liked it. One of them did not.
Well, there's always one.
One thought that she reminds me of Butch. I think every time Butch says the line, I said, you know, you remind me of the client Mona. She, one of the overnight staff when I did overnights, used to try and, you know, lighten the mood with her and, you know, be funny and tell jokes. And she would just say, jokes aren't funny. And Butch always used to say, jokes aren't funny. He doesn't like jokes. He likes funny lines, stuff like that. But if you tell a joke, he doesn't like it. I don't know.
Yeah. Why. I don't know why. I have a friend at work like that. She does not have a sense of humor. You know, doesn't like jokes, doesn't like riddles, doesn't like, you know, goofing around. You know, I say things like, oh, I love Caddyshack. No, I didn't like it. How can you not like Caddyshack? Why did you waste your time watching it if you didn't like it?
You know what my problem with Caddyshack was?
The Cinderella story?
I saw it almost 10 years after it came out.
Oh.
So every single joke in it had been blown by people.
Oh.
And yeah, I'm watching it going, oh, that's where they got that. Oh, that's where they got that.
It's kind of like people are like, oh, why don't you watch something intense like Clockwork Orange? Because I read the Mad Magazine parody. It takes all the fun out of it. Once you've read a Mad Magazine parody, it's like, eh. Kind of like when I try to go back and watch the airport movies. Airplanes kind of ruined it all for us.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you can't, you're just waiting for Leslie Nielsen to come on and say, good luck, and don't call me Shirley.
Although, when they show Airplane on TCM, you know what other movie they play right after it? Zero Hour. Ooh. Now, Joe, why would they show, let me get when it came out.
Well, it's because they did the, when Stryker was coming in, you're too low, you're too low. They basically ripped that off and took scenes right from Zero Hour.
Okay, the movie Zero Hour from 1957. They show it right after because in 1950s Canada, during a commercial flight, the pilots and some passengers suffered food poisoning, thus forcing an ex-World War II fighter pilot to try to land the airliner in heavy fog. It's the exact same plot. And as much as I love Airplane, you know what movie by Zucker and Abrams I watched more?
What's that?
Kentucky Fried Movie.
Oh, yeah.
Kentucky Fried Movie, for those who haven't seen it, is just short bits. Short commercial parodies, TV parodies, movie trailer parodies. There's a long parody of Enter the Dragon in the middle. None of the humor in it is politically correct in any way, shape, or form now. It wasn't then either. But I always thought that that was funnier. And in college, I swear we watched it at least once a month.
That sounds like the movie, is it the Boob Tube or Groove Tube?
Groove Tube. There were a few of them. There were a few of them like that.
And that had an
like,
early Jeff Jason.
Could I do it? Notable. Could I do it till I need glasses? Was another one. They were dirt cheap to make. The improv sketch comedy thing was really gaining a lot of momentum until Saturday Night Live started in 1975.
And then I gave it away free.
I tried watching Saturday Night Live this season. And all I think when I watch it is there are thousands of people doing improv. Thousands. And Saturday Night Live can't make me laugh. I could go down to Brave New Workshop back when they had shows, or Comedy Sports, or Stevie Ray's Improv Theater. And the people on that are better at putting together comedy than the people on Saturday Night Live, or even, you know, the improv guys on Whose Line Is It Anyway. Why is it Saturday Night Live with thousands of people doing sketch improv comedy is so dull?
Well, you know why. It's the way Lorne Michaels set it up Saturday Night Live. He's not looking for humor. He's looking for these guys who are working on the show to compete with each other to see who can come up with something. You know, we forget, even watching the original Saturday Night Live, that, you know, 90% of it was dreck. My favorite was they were doing a sketch with, why can't I think of the actor? Was it, anyways, it was, Dan Aykroyd was doing, Bill Clinton and whatever, and halfway through the
he would probably be doing Jimmy Carter back then.
Yeah, I'm still trying to think of the actor. Played Trapper John in MASH.
Elliot Gould was on there a lot.
So he was the guest host, and they're doing the sketch, and then he stops and he goes, "Okay, we're gonna fast forward to this part because it really got boring and really stupid. So we're just going to save you 10 minutes of your life and get to the fun stuff." And I was like, wow, that was pretty cool. So, and what amazes me as I look over Saturday Night Live is how much of that stuff I must have watched live on Saturday night, because I swore I saw it all in reruns or later on. And I'm like, no, I was watching The Muppets the first season Saturday Night Live was on. As a kid, why not? You know, it hadn't had the, parents warning on it that they figured out later, you know, because so now, you know, later on, it was like my mom was like, "I don't want my kids watching Saturday Night Live." My dad was like, "Oh, it'll be fine. It's just humorous. They'll be fine." And of course, that was the one where Jane Curtin said, "I want all the women in the United States to ban oral sex until the ERA is passed." And then, of course, Bill Murray was her counterpart. "Well, you know, Jane, that goes both ways." And my dad's like, "Yeah, maybe I picked the wrong episode for you guys to watch."
The one I remember that when it started, my mom and I would watch it together, because the first one was they had a few sketches, but it was mostly George Carlin's stand-up. He did three separate stand-up bits. The second one, they had a couple of sketches, but it was mostly a Simon and Garfunkel reunion. So when her and dad weren't out on a Saturday night, she'd watch, you know, up until the news and then go to bed. But the one where President Ford's press secretary was the host.
Oh.
And I've read behind the scenes on that. And they knew that the censor was looking for anything political. And the White House people were looking for anything political, and they wouldn't let them do anything political. So they snuck as much sex and drug jokes as they could into the show because they knew people weren't looking for that. They were looking for political stuff. And you go back and you watch it now, and it's, you know, it's kind of tame. You could run it uncensored as a TV PG. But back then, it was... My mom was like, yeah, I shouldn't be watching this with you. Because I was, what, 13, 14?
Yeah. No, no, we don't. I understand that. When I was watching Airplane, there was what did they call the automatic pilot?
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, I was kind of like, okay, girls, I'm fast-forwarding over this. Why? Because you don't need to see it with your dad. Mm-hmm. Which, of course, later they put the DVD in and watched it. And
yes.
Did they understand it? I don't care. I just didn't want to watch it with them.
Yes.
There's even some stuff now, like, you know, there some of the shows the kids watch and even my wife and I watch, you know, got a lot of sexual innuendo or stuff. And we're kind of like, yeah, we're not going to watch this with you. You can watch it on your own, but we're not going to watch it with you.
Well, the last time I visited my parents, you know, my mom and I are looking for something to watch on Netflix. And Mick Foley had talked about this documentary about what. Okay, he's huge on Christmas. So it's this documentary about what the hardcore Santa Claus guys, you know, the guys who that's their whole life, do during the off season. And the first one, you know, he helps out as a soup kitchen. And the second one, he does this. And the third one is a male prostitute.
Wait, was that Dan Aykroyd? Male prostitute?
No, it was not Fred Garvin.
Oh, not Fred Garvin, male prostitute?
Davenport's best male escort. No, it was, and we're both like, yeah, I don't think we should be watching this together. But that's not what we're here to talk about. We're here to do previews.
We're here to, not previews, reviews.
Oh, then we're here to do a Fave 5.
Yeah. Well, not even that. I was just. What are we? I've got reviews ready. What do you got?
Oh, we're doing reviews.
I thought we were doing reviews. I stayed up all night reading comic books.
No, you didn't. I saw you stayed up all night and watched Black Widow.
Well, that's what's going to be my first review.
Go ahead.
All right. No, I finally sat down, and I watched Black Widow.
Because now it is available for free on Disney Plus.
Which is enough for me. And I'll explain. I started it at about 2 in the morning. And I'll explain more when we get to geeking. See, I like to do that foreshadowing stuff. If you're not aware, Black Widow, of course, 2021. American. They call it a superhero film. Although it was more of an action, spy, espionage type film. Based on the Black Widow from the Marvel Universe, the 24th film in the franchise, takes place between Captain America: Civil War and Avengers: Infinity War. Yeah. And basically, it's kind of like, where was Black Widow? Because everybody was on the run, what she did. Brings in her life story. You know, essentially, I don't even know how much to spoil this because I don't want to spoil too much, I guess, because there's some of you like me that might have waited till it was here and ready to go. But Scarlett Johansson was there as the Black Widow, Natasha Romanoff. Florence, how do you say her name? Pugh? Yelena Belova, who's another Black Widow, is a sister figure to Romanoff. I was surprised. I did not know David Harbour was in there. I know him, of course, from The Office and Stranger Things. And he plays the Red Guardian. And I was kind of like, this is what I love about acting. Is I was like, why is this guy so familiar? And then it dawned on me who it was. It has a bunch of other characters. They bring in a Taskmaster. Thaddeus Ross is there. Why the United States Secretary of State is actually on the ground chasing superheroes, I don't know. They have their own self-contained bad guy. What I found interesting about this movie is after I watch it, I go back to the Wikipedia, and they've been working on a movie like this since 2004 when Lionsgate had the film rights. And they kept dropping the project. They kept going up, kept going down. What almost got it going was apparently there was a series of films that had came out that had women in it. I think like Tomb Raider. I forget what the other one. There were two that were big hits, and then a bunch came out like Aaron Flux and things like that that were not big hits. So they kept shelving the movie.
And then don't forget, Ike Perlmutter hates female superheroes.
Yeah.
Hates them. Hates them.
And he, Ike, you're wrong.
Well, he got forced out of the film.
Which is good, because this movie was a lot of fun. It's not brilliant. It's not like Black Panther. Oh, my God, this is crazy. It's just a good movie. I can't help but think, as good as it was, had it actually dropped between Civil War and Infinity War, it would have been a lot better. Kind of like Captain Marvel. It dropped almost the perfect time because you had to wait between the two big movies. Here's a good kind of capper. I love the acting. The action was a lot of fun. Taskmaster was okay, I guess. I mean, I don't want to reveal the surprise behind Taskmaster. I like the story. I like how they wrapped it up kind of a done in one type thing because it does take place between it. Does have a pre-credit scene and a post-credit scene. The post-credit scene had me scrambling because I guess it ties closer into Falcon and Winter Soldier, which I haven't seen yet. Not that it matters because it sets up the next TV show. And if you don't know what it is, I'm not going to spoil it. Because like I said, it's fun to watch. I had a lot of fun watching this. And I watched it with my daughter and her boyfriend. The boyfriend really loved it. He thought it was great. I mean, we both did kick-ass women. My daughter was like, it was good. Not very good. Not wow. Just good. And what was kind of sad about it was the fact that I don't know if they're going to do another Black Widow movie with Scarlett. It'd be nice if they did, but they kind of wrapped this one up so tightly. But, you know, it's a Marvel Universe. And with the explosion of the multiverse coming, we could see another version of her again. So they even talk about how they thought they were going to bring in Robert Downey Jr. to do like in the beginning prologue, you know, as everybody's running around, but they decided and rightly so, this is going to stand on its own. There are numerous comments about, yeah, why don't you just have your sky god come down and take care of it? But they wanted to make sure no matter what happens, Black Widow fought alone, met the foe alone, figured it out and solved it on her own. I don't think that's too much. I enjoyed it. Like I said, I did not see it in the theater because of COVID. I didn't pay the $30 for it because I'm cheap, but now it's part of the Disney Plus package. It's probably out on DVD too.
Yes, it is.
And I imagine if I didn't see any extras on that. Usually when you flip on, it'll like have all the extra things that are on the DVD. I didn't really look because, like I said, I started at 2 a.m. By 4 a.m, I was like, you know, once the movie's over, the adrenaline of watching it gave way and I was like, okay, time to go to bed. They may be there, I don't know, but this would be a good one to have. I might buy the DVD or probably the Blu-ray. I don't think they put fun stuff on DVD, regular DVDs anymore. So I guess we always say
buy, borrow, or ignore.
I would have to say this is a buy because I have Disney Plus. I bought it for 3 years. If you don't, it's probably worth picking it up. I don't know if you can like rent this one anymore, you know, like on pay-per-view or whatever.
You can rent it on Amazon.
Okay, so I recommend doing that if you don't have Disney Plus because it's a worthy movie in it, and it's just great seeing her kick ass. And again, I have faith in Kevin Friggy, whatever, that he'll do something. We'll see what's happening. So it was an enjoyable early morning, late night movie. Definitely worth seeing. What do you have for us, Corey?
Now, normally when I do reviews, I try to do stuff that is off the beaten path. But I've been a little too busy the past few weeks. So a lot of what I'm reviewing is my normal reading or things that have popped up. They're from the bigger companies, so I apologize for that. The first one I'm going to review is a Marvel crossover called Dark Ages. It is a how many issue miniseries?
Wait, isn't that a Jethro Tull song? Dark Age. Alrighty, and I won't do it.
Good. Because you say that you're getting sued a lot.
Well, I'm getting a lot of cease and desist letters, but it's kind of a collection now.
Well, and there are some people who, when they get a cease and desist letter, they crank it up to 11.
Yeah.
Dark Ages was supposed to come out over a year ago, but it was delayed by the COVID. So it is coming out now. It is a 6-issue miniseries. It is non-continuity.
Aw.
It is written by Tom Taylor, drawn by Iban Colo, C-O-E-L-L-O, European artist. And what it is the story of what happens in the Marvel Universe. It's set in a possible future because Peter and Mary Jane are married and have baby May. Joe, you have read the Earth X, Universe X, Paradox X, right?
Yeah.
There is a sentinel in the heart of the Earth. This is the story of when it wakes up. When it does wake up, it destroys electricity all over the Earth. So the first issue is setting up that situation and showing the disaster, showing how they are able to stop this celestial from destroying the Earth. And there are 5 issues to go, and there is no electricity. I wish they would have said in the beginning, this possible future, alternate Earth, et cetera, et cetera. DC and Marvel are getting terrible about that, where I think if someone were to pick this up and not know it's something like that, then they pick up Spider-Man and go, wait, Mary Jane and Peter don't have a kid? But when we were kids and they had something on Earth 2, they would just have a little box that said, you know, this is Earth 2. Or What If would have the Watcher tell you, you know, something like that. They've gotten away from that, and it really, quite honestly, annoys the hell out of me. Tom Taylor is best known for his work over at DC, where he did their zombie stuff, the Deceased. And I think he worked on Injustice. I have not read Injustice, but it was a video game tie-in that stole Mark Waid's idea from Incorruptible, where, you know, Superman goes evil. The first issue, really exciting, really well done. They introduce each character well. Even though they don't introduce the world well, each character, because you've got a lot of characters in this, there's a very short introduction that brings you up to speed. Like when Moon Girl and Devil Dinosaur show up. Boom, there you go. Here's everything you need to know about them for this story. Other characters show up. I was going through, okay, there's Jessica Jones and Luke Cage. When they show up, boom, here's the introduction and why they're important in this story. Very well done, and it's almost a lost skill. Because most of the time they just have, you know, they put the character's name next to the character when they first show up, rather than introducing them and letting you know why they're important, what they do. They pre-assume that you know everything. And while I would prefer that they would have given us the, you know, this is a separate universe thing, the story really works. It has that sense of peril, but it explains why that peril exists. It goes through how the heroes are going to stop it. And what amazed me as I'm reading it, I thought, oh, the battle with this Celestial, that's going to be a cool 6-issue story. Nope, it's, that's done in one. And the next issues are going to be the recovery of that. Also, like the art is very well done. Kind of a mix between the manga style and the more realistic style that Marvel uses. European art usually plays with a lot of light and shadow. This doesn't. This is more reader-friendly than that, which helps in a story that barrels along so fast. You don't have to stay and linger over the art because the story is trying to desperately pull you along as fast as it can. When this is completed, I say give it a buy. Right now it's a borrow. Read it on Marvel Unlimited until it is collected because I think it's going to be a great trade paperback. Joe?
That's interesting. I thought when I read it, I was thinking it did take place in a normal universe and that, you know, somehow at the end of it, everything would be reset. But now I can enjoy it just for as it is. Let's see. The first one I picked up, I often wait until I read 6 issues of something before I review it. Sometimes that works. Sometimes it doesn't, especially if it's something that, like, you decide, oh, I think I'll pick it up, and then you discover, oh, yeah, first issue went up to $30. But this one should be on the newsstand. I imagine 2 might be out. Primordial from Image. Let's see. Jeff Lemire, Andrea Sorrentino, Dave Stewart. I know I talked about this in previews. Essentially, a scientist is called in to help clear out a space program debris. Because back in 1959, or I should say they launched a couple animals up in outer space. By 1961, they just shut it down. There's no space program. Both the Soviets and the United States have quit their program. Even though President Nixon is as busy playing footsies with the Soviets, something's going on. And a scientist that was sent on board to help look for anything that they could salvage before they just clear it out and sell Cape Canaveral to a developer, he discovers some very strange readouts. And when he tries to report it up the chain of command, he gets fired. So this ends on a bit of a cliffhanger, which is the best way to do it, because then, of course, it makes me want to read the next issue, which I believe is out. I may have to go fetch it later. The art is very good. It's very stylish for the time. Very easy story to follow, considering you're trying to get along with the mystery and just what in living blazes is going on. What I love about it is you're reading it, you know, you come up to a point where you go, troop movements on the Polish border. President Nixon warned the Soviets again that such aggression would not be tolerated. Elsewhere, presidential runner-up John Kennedy, senator, whom Nixon defeated last year. So you already know this is a bit of an alternate reality. It doesn't have to hit you in the face. You know, if you're used to reading these type of comics, I definitely give this one a buy because I did, and I'm in it at least through the first 6 issues. I do not recall if it's a miniseries or not, but like I said, the first issue should be on the shelves, maybe the second, so you can run to your friendly neighborhood comic store. Or do like we do oftentimes in the case of an Image book, wait till the trade comes up. Because if, say, it was meant to be continued and they never continue it, well, at least you got one nice trade that you can read out of it. So, but yeah, this one I definitely recommend with a buy. Mr. Strode.
The next book I have is also an Image book. I read the first trade paperback of Die. I did review the first issue a bajillion years ago, but now I have read the entire first trade paperback. I actually have the first 3 trade paperbacks. It is written by, let me pull it up here. Oh, come on. You should have the credits in the beginning of the story. Well, I know it's written by Karen Gillan.
They were like right on the cover of the other one.
Well, it's just the last names. There we go. Written by Kieran Gillan, drawn by Stephanie Hands. The art almost feels like watercolor paintings. Really beautiful, moody stuff. Fits the story well. And I don't, it looks like it's computer coloring, but it, man, you know, you've got, she's the only person listed as artist. There's nobody listed as colorist. There is a Ryan Hughes as designer. But when you read the book, it looks different from any other comic on the stands. It very much is a series of paintings. Reminds me a lot of those painted books that Marvel did through Epic in the late 80s, which fits because the idea of the story is six teenagers get together for a game of a Dungeons and Dragons type game. They can't call it Dungeons and Dragons. One of the players, the game master, has created a new game, and everybody gets a single die. And when they begin the game, they vanish. 2 years later, they show back up. One of them is missing an arm. Another one is simply missing. And they are not allowed to talk about what happened while they were missing. The story then picks up 20 years later. Their lives have gone on. And from there, they get word through a bloody 20-sided die that they may be able to go back and save their friend. So they do. And when they do, things are not what they were, and nothing is what it seems. I like the fact that Kieran Gillen has done a lot of work on this so that as the story unfolds, there's more and more levels of mystery. One of the things about a story like this is you could very easily just do the basics. There was a book series back in the 80s. I think it was called Guardians of the Flame. Most of my friends really loved it. I've read the first book and thought, well, it's kind of lame, which had the same idea, except there wasn't the level of mystery and there wasn't the level of almost horror in having to have gone through that. It was more, yay, this is fun. We all get to be wizards and paladins and thieves and clerics and stuff. Whereas Di gets into the horror of carrying the burden of that, of dealing with the fact that you are in this other realm where you're deciding who lives and dies, where you're having to make choices that can have horrifying consequences. The first trade paperback also ends in a way that he had built up to, but felt very out of the blue. When you read it, you're like, what the hell? And then you go back and you read it again, and you see all the seeds he planted for that twist. And to me, that is such a skillful thing to do. I read lots of mysteries. I read lots of detective novels, read lots of crime novels. And I watch, you know, after you watch a lot of TV and you read a lot of books and you read a lot about how to write stories, it's unbelievably easy to spot stuff. I used to have a friend in high school who, when we would watch TV, he would be so proud of the fact that he was able to guess the endings to a TV show. And I never had I never wanted to spoil the illusion when it's, dude, there's only one way the show ends every week. You're not a genius. You're just picking out all the obvious stuff. It's like when I used to watch CSI. Once you figure out the formula, whodunit is never a mystery. You know, the first person they bring in is going to be a red herring. The second person they bring in is going to be a lead that brings you to the third person who actually did it. It's not, and the mystery is, how do they get there rather than whodunit? There are some things that are whodunits, and there are some where it's, you're watching the people put the puzzle together. A lot like Columbo. There are a lot of people who, well, why should I watch Columbo when you see who did it in the first 10 minutes? Because what you're watching is for watching Lieutenant Columbo figure out who did it. And you are trying to you're trying to play along to see when did he figure it out and how did he figure it out. So Die does a really good job of hiding that twist in plain sight. Kieran Gillen is one of those creators who, the more I read of his stuff, the more it's just, he's so masterful at the skill of putting a story together. The Loki series he did, the Young Avengers series he did, and now Die. Highly recommended. This gets a buy. Buy it as trade paperbacks, and I imagine when it's done, I will sell off my trade paperbacks and buy the collected volume, because this is one I will read over and over. Joe?
The next one I've got is from AWA, Fight Girls by Frank Cho and Sabine Rich. Ten women.
Is there a story?
There is.
Or is it just Frank Cho drawing beautiful, muscular women?
Well, let's put it this way. They're beautiful, muscular women in a battle royale type setting. 10 women, 4 challenges, 1 crown, winner rules the empire. It starts in the beginning and it sets it up on one page. The queen is no more. 12 months ago, she abdicated her throne. In accordance with the original royal constitution bylaw, a special parliament of August inter members was formed when Queen Regina was proven barren and unable to bear a royal heir. With the purpose of the royal bloodline survival, a special parliament annulled the Queen's Regina's marriage to the reclusive King Gilmorin the VIII and resurrected the ancient contest of champions to fill the vacant Queen's throne. 10 women of royal and common blood from the vast reaches of the empire were tested and selected for the ancient contest. Before them, 4 challenges await: trial by jungle, trial by desert, trial by water, and trial by combat. Whoever survives all the challenges will be crowned the next queen of the Gamoran Empire. This will be broadcast live as it happens, completely uncensored. Blood will be spilled. And, you know, there are people in the background, powers that to be, that are probably vying to get their woman in place. That's all I'm going to say. I've read the first 3 issues. It's a 5-issue miniseries. I imagine it's all out. The art is Frank Cho. It's gorgeous. It's easy to follow. You know who's who. The story is compelling. I mean, if you've seen, what was the movie, Hunger Games? Yeah. Or you've read Battle Royale and you know, hey, well, let's just say, yeah, these beautiful women, the way it's going, I'm not sure how any of them are going to make it. However, that in mind, the story moves fast. It's furious. It's almost like you're watching it live. What's kind of distracting is, you know, they got little word balloons that are popping up because they obviously have drones flying around trying to catch everything. So you're here, hey, get drone 5 up in the air. Check this out. There's 2 commentators and spiked captions that are telling us what's going on, almost like we're watching it in television. It is a fight to the death. And like I said, we've got, I've read 3 issues of the 5. And like I said, because of the way I ship my books once a month, I imagine either 4 or 5 or all of them are out. And if they don't put this in a trade paperback, AWA is not as smart as I thought they were. I don't know. I was under the impression that everything in AWA kind of ties together in the same universe. But that doesn't really matter in this particular series because this is just Frank Cho and Sabine Rich cutting loose and doing what they can the best. If I mean, you have me at Frank Cho. So, and they're both working the art together. And it's seamless. I mean, you can't really say, oh, well, this is Frank's part and this is Sabine's part. But let's see, where are we now? October. We're recording this on the 17th. So this week, By the time you hear this, number 4 will be out. Hopefully you'll be able to get all 5 of them. Or if you want, I guess Mike Deodato Jr. was doing the variant covers. I chose to go with just the regular Frank cover. Because you can't go wrong with Frank. Right? So Out of the Deg, Borrow or Ignore. Again, the two things to remember. If you're a Frank Cho fan, yes. If you're like that type of battle royale fight to the finish, yes. If this ain't your cup of tea, you'll probably know by the time you thumb through the first issue. But I just found it intriguing. And who knows? Maybe they make a movie out of it. I don't know how they do these things. You know, you could easily see this being a movie, especially nowadays with Netflix and everything. I wonder how many comic creators actually do that. You know, figure, okay, I'll write this up and see if it flies as a movie. So definitely pick this one up. Trust your Uncle Joe. Corey, what do you got next?
The next thing I have is 2 issues, and that is the first 2 issues of the new team on Amazing Spider-Man. We talked last week about how with Spider-Man, they sort of rush Nick Spencer off the book.
And I did read that last issue of his.
Yeah. And did you agree with me that, man, it felt really rushed?
It did, but I did like it because my brain is wired that way for complex plots. So I bought it. But yeah, it was, and you know, they also triple sized it anyway. So
yeah.
So they gave them room to finish it, and then there was some extra fun stuff in it as well. But yeah, if this was supposed to be rushed, kudos, Nick. Yeah, I enjoyed it.
And it clears up two of the things that we have complained about. It clears up Sin's past, the worst Spider-Man story other than other. And it clears up how Harry Osborn came back from the dead in Brand New Day.
He got better.
So the first issue, issue 75, is by Zeb Wells and Patrick Gleason. And it sets up the new storyline. There is a corporation called the Beyond Corporation, which has kind of been floating around the Marvel Universe for a few years. And Joe, I'm going to drop another hint here. It was also in the Ultimate Universe. And they have hired Ben Reilly, who we last saw as the bad guy in the Spider-Clone story a couple of years ago, which they've rehabilitated him since then. They have hired him to be the new corporate Spider-Man. And this takes Peter Parker by surprise. The first issue is both of them taking on a threat. And at the end of it, something horrible happens to Peter Parker. Then in issue 76, we get a little more behind the scenes. We get a little more of how Ben Reilly got to be Spider-Man through the Beyond Corporation. And Peter Parker is on a hospital bed, barely clinging to life. Aunt May and Mary Jane come to his bedside. Aunt May gets a fantastic scene in issue 76. One of the best Aunt May scenes in years. Absolutely fantastic. Did more for her character than anyone's done in a while. And a lot of times when new creators take over a book, they really sort of hit that reset button. Marvel has got to the point where when creators take over a book, they're going to tell their story. And their story will have a beginning, middle, and end. And the last one that just wrapped up was The Immortal Hulk. Al Ewing had a story he wanted to tell. It was 50 issues long. He told it. Now the next creative team is going to come on and do their Hulk story. And I have really grown to like that rather than in the 70s, that endless soap opera that, you know, it kept everybody on the treadmill. And then in the 80s, when the 80s first started, it became, all right, villain of the month. until you had some creators like Byrne and Simonson and Chris Claremont, who was over in his own corner doing his own thing, who broke that mold and did their own thing. We're not going to talk about the 90s. Then in the 2000s, it was 6-issue stories so they could be put in a trade paperback. And now they're doing creator arcs. So this is the start of a new era for Spider-Man, but it's not a single creator. What it is, they've assembled a team, and Spider-Man's going to be coming out much more often. The writer's team is 5 people. It's Zeb Wells, Kelly Thompson, Cody Ziegler, who I have no idea who he is, Saladin Ahmed, Patrick Gleason, who's mostly known as an artist, but wrote at DC, and Zeb Wells. They're going to be trading off issues, but they've all kind of come together on this story. And from the first 2 issues, this is going to be a good period for Spider-Man. It reminds me a lot of the, what was that? The Brand New Day, where they did sort of the same thing. They had a number of people who would rotate in and out on Spider-Man. This is more, they're all working as a team. A lot like the back in the 90s when it was Spider-Man, Amazing Spider-Man, Web of Spider-Man, and Spectacular Spider-Man. Feels a lot like that to me. So if you're a Spider-Man fan, this is a good start. Because it's coming out almost weekly, I don't mind the fact that the first story arc, I think, is 18 issues. But they've dropped enough stuff in here that it's going to be worth it. I'm giving it a buy if you're a Spider-Man fan. If you're not a Spider-Man fan, I don't think this will convince you because it does play with past continuity. Like a lot of books, you have to know who Ben Reilly is. You have to know about the Clone Saga. You have to know about this, that, and the other in order to be up to speed. So for Spider-Man fans, I give it a strong buy. If you're not a Spider-Man fan, you may want to wait and buy it as a trade paperback when they have some of the back matter that will explain stuff. Joe?
All right, where are we at? How many things have we reviewed?
We are at 49 minutes, so this will be your last
review. This will be it. All right. I picked up a book from Image called The Terrible Elizabeth Drum Against the Devil in Suits. The Devil's in Suits. Elizabeth Drum is a strong, rebellious girl determined to make her own way. Good thing, too, because her father long ago promised her to the devil, and he's come to claim what's his. Part horror, part adventure, part surreal dreamscape. It's an original graphic novel, and it features the amazing artwork of Brazilian sensation Erobson Esses. It's a story that will haunt you long after you've turned the final pages. I don't know about that, but the cast, other than Abramson, we have Anderson Sobral. James Robinson wrote it. Klebs Jr. Those are the 4 guys. They form something called, I don't know if it's IHO or IHQ Studios. So if you go to IHQstudios.com, it's a talent group in Brazil that works with some top comic publishers in the world. This is an oversized graphic novel, so looking at the art is fabulous. His art is amazing, very moody. It suits the horror venture part. You're going to have no problem knowing who the characters are, which is always a plus for me when I start a new series. Again, this thing just came out, so I don't really want to give too much away other than what was on the back cover. I will probably read this one a couple times because I have a feeling I may have missed some of the subtle things, but it's done in one. It's not going to be a continued story, so if you do pick it up, you don't have to worry that they're going to be bringing you down the road for other ones. And the fact that it is its original graphic novel, and it was priced pretty good. It was only $5.99. I did get a Teens Plus rating, so you could conceivably give this to your daughter to read. I think that's all I'm going to say about it. the terrible Elizabeth drum against the devils in suits. And if she's terrible, you know, we'll see what the devil does about that. So, and again, this one might be a tough one to find because it's way oversized in a comic. So what's a comic about? Let me grab my, excuse me while I whip this out.
11 by 8.
So this baby is 11 and a half by 7 and a half.
So it's taller.
And wider. Okay. Oh, comics about, I got a comic here. 7 by, I'm sorry, 10 by little under 7. I've got a copy of The Death of Doctor Strange, which I think you talked about last week.
The bags are always 11 by 7.
So bags are just slightly different. So yeah, this one is a little bit bigger. It's a good format. I think it serves the art well. And like I said, I don't want to give too much of the story away, especially if it's something new. But I was intrigued. It was one of those kind of a journey type comics. And I was just, I sat outside and read it a couple hours ago. And I just kept going. Because I wanted to, see where it ended up. And it is a done in one, which is nice. So trust your Uncle Joe. It's the best five, well, not the best, but one of the better $5.99s you're going to spend. And what do you have last for us, Corey?
The last I have is a second miniseries by Howard Chaykin, Hey Kids Comics.
Can I make a quick freaking on that?
Sure.
And this had nothing to do with Howard Chaykin or the actual comic or image, but I got a note from Discount Comic Book Service said Diamond Comics shorted them on this issue, number 5, and that I wouldn't get it. Fortunately, I ran over to the gang over at Comic College and was able to pick one up. But I was fairly disappointed in Discount Comic Book Service and was a little upset, especially since issue 6 is already out and it took them that long for Diamond to cough up and say, yeah, we're not going to give you any more. I thought about complaining to Howard himself, but nope. I don't want to upset him any more than he already is. But like I said, I just ran to my local friendly comic. I actually hit a couple different comic shops. Comic College is the ones that actually had it. So, end of Mini Freak.
This is by Howard Chaykin, written and drawn and inked and probably taken to the printer and everything else. Chaykin is telling they call it Tuckerizing, where you take real people and turn them into fictional people. I don't know where that term comes from. I know it comes from science fiction. I know it's something that's done a lot in science fiction. There was a writer who did it to me. He had me as a Klingon in one of his Star Trek novels, a Klingon who loved fiery haired wenches. Of course, I died 3 pages in.
So. Oh, that might be worth buying it alone.
But this is a 6-issue miniseries telling kind of the story of the comic book industry from the beginning of the Comics Code to 1982. There are 2 things about this that, in my mind, hold it back from a general public comic fan reading and enjoying it. First is, it is incredibly episodic. It leaps year to year. There aren't a lot of transitions. You really have to be reading it carefully. This is not a book you breeze through. You need to read it carefully. You need to read it slowly because he uses fashions and other trends to let you know that you've leapt ahead a couple of years. And the other thing is, if you don't quite know much about comics, you're going to get lost because some of the stories he tells are very much keyed to knowing who this person is. You know, it's slightly fictionalized. Some of the scenes are heightened. Some of the stuff in there I kind of disagree with. Any scene with Paul Gertz that he has, I just go, no, that's not true. So, however, it's Howard Chaykin, And Chaykin rewards the careful reader. He rewards the person who pays attention to the plot. He rewards the person who knows what he's telling them. And I've loved Chaykin since American Flag. His stuff before American Flag, I could take or leave. I got to be honest, when I read his adaptation of Star Wars, oh, I do not like that art. There's some black and white stuff that he did in the 70s that I really love, and some that I don't like at all. There are some of his other stories that I like. Monarch Starstalker I like a lot. What was the Dominic Fortune I like a lot. Some of his other stuff is just cringeworthy. And it's almost like, wow, Howard, you're really wishing that you were Neil Adams here, don't you? But by the time we got to American Flag, he had finally developed his own style, his own storytelling. And that book is fantastic. Since then, everything he's done, I've enjoyed. This is another one I enjoy, but I really don't know if people who don't know comics history will give a shit. So it's very, very narrow. I think if you're someone like me who loves comics history, this is a buy. And this is the second volume. There's going to be a final volume that goes from 1982 up to almost present. It's a buy. If you don't know or want to know about comics history, this is an ignore. It's very bifurcated along those lines. A lot of Chaykin stuff I recommend to anybody. But hey, kids, comics, I only recommend to hardcore comics fans who've been fans for a while so that they kind of understand who he's talking about, who he's making fun of, and what dirt he's shoveling. You know who is good for everybody, Joe?
I don't.
Our sponsor, NordVPN, because you need a VPN to protect you out on the internet. Just listen. Our newest sponsor is NordVPN. Let's be honest, if you're out on the internet, you need a VPN to protect you. There's all sorts of things going on the internet where people can track you. You could accidentally download a keylogger. All sorts of things. NordVPN gives the best security possible. It has a password manager, which generates complex passwords, syncs across all your devices, stores your notes and credit card information. It also gives you 10 gigabytes of private cloud storage, secure files that backs up your data automatically. But the main thing it gives you is peace of mind. It gives you peace of mind when you're out on the internet, when you're streaming, when you're playing games, when you're listening to podcasts like this one. It gives you safety anywhere at any time. It protects your online activity. You get full access to all content. And if you use the link go.nordvpn.net/3ku, it'll take you to where you can get a great deal for a 1 month plan, a 2 year plan, a 1 year plan. They are our newest sponsor. We're happy to have them. And if you would like to sponsor something here at any of the podcasts on the Solitaire Rose Network, you can. Just email me, solitairerosenetwork@gmail.com. Thanks. I almost feel like I should be doing the Bullwinkle thing of, you know, must be 7.5. But no.
Now here's something you'll really enjoy.
The Solitaire Rose Radio Network is currently on a pause, basically because COVID-19 has made it so that I have to work a lot of extra hours at both jobs. But you can still go and listen to my other podcasts. Now, you're probably listening to Crazy Comics and Stories, which is the main podcast. But on this same feed, KRAYZCOMIX, is Solitaire Rose Radio, the solo radio podcast that I do. I've done interviews, I've done short stories, I've done all sorts of things, and you can get to it right here on this same feed. I also do a podcast called Novelcast, where I take the novels I've written and turn them into free audiobooks. That's over at novels.solitairerose.com. Dangerous Dan Moore and I, and of course Wolfie B. Bad, give you bad advice over at badadvice.solitairerose.com. You send in your questions, and we give you the aforementioned bad advice. And then myself and Adam Vermillion from For the Love of Comics do the Fantastic Forecast at fantasticforecast.solitairerose.com, where we go through the issues of the Fantastic Four, four issues at a time, to give the plot and commentary on each issue. That's not all. Yes, I'm crazy. I still, over at PWInsiderElite.com, every week on Wednesday, do a recap of the latest episode of AEW Dynamite. I write up what happened, and then myself and Anthony Pyrus will do an audio. Now, you can only listen to the audio if you're a member at PWInsiderElite.com, and if you're a wrestling fan, you should be, where we then break down the episode, talk about what we liked, what we didn't like, give it a grade, and let you know if you should have watched that episode. Those are the other podcasts here at the Solitaire Rose Radio Network. Thanks. And now here's something that Joe really likes, and that is, Joe, what's going on the eBays?
But it's all covering books that we've talked about in the past, and I don't really want to repeat things that we've talked about. I will mention a few honorable mentions because some of them are unique. Let's see. There we go. Gotta fire up the old Cray 3000. Tends to go to sleep when we're talking about comic books. But I sold a Heroes Comics 2012 Campbell variant cover. That was back when IDW was doing it for the Heroes Initiative, a benefit book. Mighty Thor number 700 that had Chris Hemsworth on the photo as Thor. That was back in 2017. Secret Wars official guide to the Marvel Multiverse, if you remember Secret Wars. And I think we talked about the new one coming out. Last year, Marvel did a book called Incoming that kind of gave seed to all the stories in the upcoming year. And I forgot what they called it for the upcoming year. Excuse me a second while I look at my notes from last week's episode. Timeless is what they're calling it this year. And usually they're fun stories. There's probably a central character that will show up throughout the Marvel universe. In this case, Incoming, I believe it was a guy, the Masked Rider or whatever.
Yep.
I don't, because he's in Defenders now. This happened to be the 1-in-100 wraparound hidden gem variant cover by J. Scott Campbell. Going anywhere from $75 to $100. Somebody called and asked through the eBay mail system, hey, would you take this? And I said, yes. So that's pretty much all you need to do. Fantastic Four Visionaries graphic novel, sold that. That's got Walt Simonson and a little bit with the Time Variance Authority, who looks like it's becoming more of a player in the not only the Marvel movie universe, but after reading the last double-sized Fantastic Four issue, looks like they're coming to they're taking things from the movie universe and putting it into the regular Marvel comic universe. So it's like, whatever, it's all works. Let's see, what other goodies did we sell? Well, the rest of it, like I said, is all repeat. I've got a lot of fun stuff coming up. I'm still working through the stuff that Kelly gave me to sell from the charity booth. I just did a massive trade with the guys at Granite City. Basically, I had a ton of toys that, well, I probably could have made quite a bit of money off them. It takes more to ship a toy because you got to pack it. And you not only grade the toy, but you got to grade the package. And I told Tim, after we've done a couple deals over the past couple years, you know, he said he expressed interest in what I had. And I said, well, I would probably just trade it for comics that I can put up on the eBays. Although it may be a few I'll keep. So I haven't taken advantage of the deal we sealed, but I'll be going up there probably in the next couple of weeks. And so when I come back, I'll be all excited about that, because that was the trip I did. I think I talked about it last podcast, where I went up and just kind of geeked around and checked some stuff out. And of course, if I do go up, I may still go to that vintage store in North Branch and see if you guys haven't bought those Dell trade paperbacks. I may buy them because they're pretty cool. But in the meantime, a lot of fun. If you see anything you like on the eBays, you know what to do. Drop me a line. Let them know you are listening to this here podcast and that you're a valued listener, even though not one of you have given us a Wikipedia page for Christmas or Festivus.
Bastards.
I know. But I love you nonetheless. Mention the podcast and look me up. KRAYZ. Come get some.
And now we get to my favorite part of the show. No, not where I spend 3 hours going through my computer's hard drive to delete memes.
Yeah, I just put them in a file and then once a year, whoop, bye-bye file.
No, it's Freaking and Geeking Joe. What are you freaking on?
The fact that I just lost my Freaking and Geeking. Hang on a second. I've actually gotten to actually start writing these things down, because what happens is during the week I may see something like, oh, I'd like to comment that on the podcast. And then when the podcast comes around, I'm like, what in hell's bells that I was going to remember? More importantly, I can go back to say, like, did I mention Kurt Pusiak is bringing back Astro City to Image Comics? Yeah, I did. I mentioned that two podcasts ago. This week was a rough one for me. As you can tell, I forgot we were going to talk about Fave Fives, but I did read some comic books, but I didn't really do much of anything. On Wednesday, I woke up and I felt like a Mack truck hit me. And of course, this day and age, you think, uh-oh, C word. Well, I called off. I ironically went to the airport where they have the free COVID testing. Within 24 hours, I found it wasn't. So apparently I'm just fighting an old-fashioned cold, which would make sense because it's pretty much in my head. My throat's sore still. I'm a little congested, a little rough sleeping, but I'm feeling much better now. We're at the War of the Mice. Somewhere in the house, I must have a hole because we've been eliminating mice left and right. You know, we've set out live traps, we set out glue traps, which I don't like as much, but the good old fashioned $1.99 for five of them snap traps seem to be working. We have an exterminator that came out and he did inspection of the house. He said there's a few places they may be getting in. Usually it's because somebody dragged something in from the garage and didn't clean it. Still don't know if the kids did it or not, because I haven't done that in a while. But I mean, this is how prevalent it is. I mentioned a couple weeks ago the cat caught two. We caught two. So the score was tied. Since then, the cat hasn't caught any. But, and again, he's a toothless, clawless a rescue cat. So, I mean, the fact that he caught two to begin with is pretty impressive.
Do not think that cats won't do that. We had a cat at one of the group homes I worked at that had been declawed, was mostly toothless, and she would kill birds. Basically, she would pounce on them and then just rip them to shreds with her teeth. Just because they have that instinct still.
Yeah.
So, they can still hunt and kill. They are cute little murder fluffs.
They are. And the big thing with Bubba is, and this is probably why, I mean, he's a lot bigger than the cats or the mice. And more than likely, you know, if you ever, little cats are just like lions. They tend to grab and suffocate. Here's how it's worked. Yesterday, I went home, got home from work, and I'll talk about more in geeking. We caught a mouse, brought it out to the trash, reset the trap. By the time I started watching Black Widow, which it was in a couple hours, caught another one. During the time watching Black Widow, caught a third one. So sometimes I get a double feature. I got two traps set and I'll catch two at a time. So one thing I noticed, the mice are getting smaller and smaller. So I think I've got the adults and now I'm just the juvenile ones. The fact that they're going to the same place over and over is good because that means they're not spreading out in the house. Although I have found you know, evidence they are around. You know, open a box and it's like, oh, look at that. They chewed up my book and left like piles of mouse shit all over. But I think we're going to win the war. They're going to seal up the house. And then after that, it's just you and me, mice. You hear that? I'm coming for you. Oh, sorry. A little emotional. That's pretty much it. Like I said, other than being sick, that really took a lot of wind out of my sails, which is probably one of the reasons I haven't run up to Granite City to finish up our trade. But how about you, Mr. Strode? How are you doing? What are you freaking on?
Joe, do you collect the Flash?
I don't.
Probably good, because they are not printing enough to meet orders.
You can't hear it, but my shoulders just shrugged.
DC did not have enough paper, basically, to meet orders. So they will be, it will be a second printing, but they're not labeling it as second printing because it's okay. This is the first batch. And then this will be the second batch. DC also announced a whole bunch of delays on the big books. And I read an article today about why there is this paper shortage. It's the pandemic. And not the reasons you think. Because so many companies, not just Amazon, so many companies are getting cardboard boxes for stuff to go through the mail and through UPS and through FedEx, that they converted a number of paper factories to cardboard factories. So many, in fact, that when demand for paper went up, toilet paper, remember last year when you couldn't get toilet paper and you couldn't get Kleenexes and you couldn't get paper towels? Yeah, that was because they converted all the paper making mills to cardboard making mills. And paper for books and comics and other paper products, they're having to ramp up. They're actually having to start up old paper factories that had been put out of commission years ago because of the demand. And from what I'm hearing, there are toilet paper shortages again.
Ah!
So that it's a weird reason why there are these paper shortages. I was very confused by it. I think that was about it for freaking for me. Oh, there was one other one. Joe, I think I talked last week about how happy I am that CSI is back.
Yes.
It is a 10-issue limited series.
Hmm.
They are not sure if they're going to be doing a second season. The first season is only 10 episodes. From what I hear, most everybody is only under a one-year contract. So if they do continue it, they will have to have a new contract, which surprises me because one of the things about CSI that I could always tell, it was a really expensive show. It was one of the first shows in like 2001, 2002, where they wanted it to have that cinematic look. So they spent a lot of money on sets, a lot of money on... TV shows are usually filmed on the cheap. Now they're filmed much more richly, like a film. Sopranos was one of the first that did that, but CSI was one of the first network TV series that did it. And when I watched the first episode in the new CSI, they've built all new sets. And these are not cheap sets. These are really expensive, shiny sets. So if it's only going to be a 10-episode miniseries, kind of surprises me unless they're going to make a lot of money off foreign sales. So, Joe, what are you geeking on?
All right. I came home last night, and I've only got a few more Saturdays free. So what I've been doing is taking a couple hours off. Our last flight out is usually by 7 o'clock at the smaller Humphrey Terminal. So we have a choice. You can just hang around, or you can burn some vacation time and go home. As my days off are changing, I won't be off Sunday, Monday, Tuesday. I'll be off Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, which is kind of neat because I'll be off Comic Book Day. I'll be off Thanksgiving. I'll be off Black Friday. So all this time I had taken off as vacation now comes back, and I just, you know, I still have that week off, but I'll probably, you know, work Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, and then like Wednesday through Saturday off. So yeah, I'm looking forward to that. So I figured, as you know, my wife's out of town, went to Reno to see my daughter. And I figured
and to
I would
shoot a man just to watch him
just
die.
Just to watch him die. And I wouldn't doubt it. And that's why I didn't go with her. Okay. But I figured I'm going to come home. And this was Friday. I asked the boss, I said, hey, can I, you know, go home at six tomorrow? Because like I said, if you're flying the way you're supposed to, you're there 2 hours in advance. By 6 o'clock, everybody should be in. And we're just waiting for the plane to push so we can drop the gate, do a 98, and I'll head home or, you know, hang around somewhere. I figured I would, you know, stop by my favorite pizza place, get some potato skins, get some pizza, come home, and just watch stuff. Just catch up on programs I'm halfway through, on movies I've never finished, on movies I haven't started. About 5 p.m., and it's a little mini geeking, my stomach started playing tricks on me. So you want a pizza? Grumble, grumble, grumble. I don't think so. Fine. No pizza, no potato skins. I did stop at Target and pick up some apples and some shredded wheat. So one way or another. And then, of course, by, you know, 10 o'clock, I'm like, damn, I could have eaten the pizza, but I didn't. I'll have it tonight. So I sat down and I watched in no particular order. Well, actually, this is the order I watched. I caught up on the next episode of Picard. I watched an episode of Lower Decks. I watched the third episode of Loki. That's important because people are telling me, oh, man, you got to watch the last episode of What If. You got to watch the last episode of Loki. The Venom is big, too. So I imagine all this multiverse stuff is coming home to rest. So after Loki, I did watch an episode of What If. It was the third one with what if Doctor Strange lost his heart instead of his hands. Wow. Just wow. I pulled up. I can't find it online without paying for it. But as you know, the great Babylon 5, getting my wife to watch it, struggle is over. I, however, want to finish up season 5 because I haven't watched it in so very long. But what happened was is when the PETN network, which was kind of a weird subsidiary that Time Warner started, went bankrupt and went under, the future of Babylon 5 was over. So they rushed it through to get the stories done. And then TNT came into the rescue and said, we will do a fifth season, but we need you to do a series of movies. And one of them was B5 in the beginning, where there's basically a primer for everybody with new film, with old film put together. And I cannot find it on HBO. What do they call it? Plus Max, HBO Max. I don't know, whatever it's called. It's available for $1.99 on Amazon Prime. You know what Joe says? Screw that. I got the DVDs downstairs. So I brought them upstairs and I watched the movie. Now, as I go through season 5, there are certain parts where they drop certain movies. Unfortunately, TNT kind of screwed over Straczynski. He vowed he would never come back and work for these guys again because of what they did to him, unless he was given complete creative control and a decent budget. Well, as I bitched about last week, well, I didn't really bitch, but some people are bitching now. They're rebooting it. So I'm just trying to get caught up. While I was watching Babylon 5 movie, which I think was an hour 40 maybe because of commercials, the kids came in. They said, hey, you want to watch? What are you doing? I said, well, I'm just getting ready to watch some stuff. I'm probably watch Black Widow. Oh, can we watch it with you? Well, yeah, I'm going to start it up next. Oh, well, can you wait? We're going out for a drive. Get something to eat. We'll come back. I said, okay. Well, they came back. No big deal. I watched another episode of Lower Decks. But then I watched Black Widow. And I tell you, out of everything I'm watching, I'm absolutely enjoying it. It was just a fun night. I haven't said, I'm always in a quandary with my time. Who isn't? Do I want to read the thousands and thousands of comics that I have, or the graphic novels, or behind me I've got all the DVDs. Some are still sealed. I've never watched them. Or do I want to sit down and watch the streaming services? I've got graphic novels. I've got omnibuses. So I've just decided, you know, hey, when I get an opportunity to just late night watch something. But of course, in 3 years, 3 months, I will retire and then I will have time to really, really, you know, review things, watch things. It'll be a whole new podcast.
Can I tell you what my mom told me about retirement? You think you're going to have so much time. You really do. And then after a few months, you're like, oh my God, I can't believe I have so much crap I got to do.
Well, my whole plan is to up the eBay, which is part of why I got rid of the toys, because I realized I can do the comics fast. In fact, I'm in a quandary because I'm kind of like, do I want to sell off this stuff knowing that in 2-3 years it might go up? But I do. You know, part of it is I'm putting things in the storage. Like I said, the toys that I'm not going to get to. One of the things I'll do tomorrow is I've got these huge toys. Like I got that Corey's favorite Tonka 25-year silver edition Mighty Tonka dump truck.
Ugh.
That, you know, love to attack Corey.
That nearly gave me a concussion.
Yeah, Corey got laid out by a Mighty Tonka dump truck. I tell you, man, I've seen
old enough that it was steel.
It is.
Because when I was a kid, you know, the toys were steel. And then slowly over time, they became plastic or aluminum.
Yeah.
This thing, steel. And I, you know, we have it stacked on top of all our crap in Joe's truck. He takes a turn fast and it just rolls
bam.
Up. Bam! Right into my head.
It's loud. It's in a box, sharp cornered box.
But when it hit, Butch was like, the hell was that? And I was like, yeah, it's Joe's truck clanking me in the head.
No, it was just a Mighty Tonka dump. And of course, you don't mess with Tonka. There's something coming up called Tonka Days, and I got to figure out what it is. Somebody was telling me about it, and I don't, because she said, are you going to this? I said, I don't know what it is, which is usually a clue for you to say, yeah, well, here's what it is. But she hasn't responded. But other big toys, I've got like two huge sets of Jay and Silent Bob Strikes Back, big figure ones. I've got a huge The Muppet Show set of the Electric Teeth, Dr. Teeth and Electric Mayhem. Got a full-size Supergirl statue, the IDW Hasbro Revolution set. Just tons of big toys. I'll probably wrap them up in plastic and bring them to the storage area just so I can start, you know, clearing these things out. I got a spam museum up there, a Department 56 spam museum that I got from when we visited the spam museum down in Austin, Minnesota. Well, why do I want to keep selling stuff? Because I keep buying stuff. I picked up off the eBays. It's not available yet, but it's going to be at the San Diego Comic-Con. The first Batmobile. It's the they're all on pre-order. Guy had them cheap for about $110. They're going anywhere from $125 to $130 on the aftermarket. They're not even out yet because they're going to be part of the San Diego Comic-Con. You know, every year I always pick up whatever the Hot Wheel thing is. What got me? Well, first of all, this is the first Batmobile. It's red. It's some type of sedan, sports sedan. And what they have inside it are little itty-bitty Robin and Batman figures. And the Batman figures got his cape flying out the back over the trunk. I mean, this thing's expensive. I would love to open it. I'm not going to. I mean, look what happened years ago when I had that San Diego Comic-Con exclusive Wonder Woman Invisible Jet. I opened it, dropped it, and never found it again. I did buy another one, and I think I paid like, what, $25 for them? And they're going for like $400 now. They made a second version, so if you want to get one yourself, just don't open it. Or just be very careful you don't drop it. So, yeah, that's why I'm still eBaying, because I still like to buy. Matter of fact, I got a whole watch list of stuff that one of these days I'll just fire the boom. One of the reasons I haven't is because we're switching over from TCF to Huntington Bank. And that means new accounts and all these other things. And, you know, I don't know where the hell all the money's going. It's either going into my regular account or into some limbo. Well, that sounded too much like a freaking. You know what? I'm going to back out. Corey, what are you geeking on? Uh-oh.
What is this, Joe?
He's got food. It's either those sprinkles that the British authority said you cannot use in British bakeries or candy corn.
Nope.
Oh.
Family-sized Monster Mash.
Oh.
50th anniversary artificial berry-flavored frosted cereal with monster marshmallows with frankenberry, booberry, fruit brute, yummy mummy, and it's Count Chocula. Okay, it's Count Chocula and frankenberry were both in 71. So it's frankenberry, Count Chocula, booberry, fruit brute, yummy mummy. Yes, they have them. I am a happy nerd. TV wise, oh man, was AEW great this week. If you are a wrestling fan of any kind, go to the YouTubes, put in AEW, watch the Rampage buy-in from last Friday from 10:15. You will get a 25-minute match between Minoru Suzuki and Daniel Bryan. I'm sorry, Bryan Danielson. That will blow your mind. It was so good. I was watching it just, and the thing was, I had to cover it. So I do that. And then after I'm done covering it and I record the audio and everything, I sit down and I watch the match again. It was that good. I wanted to watch it without having to type what was going on. I just wanted to sit and enjoy it. Then, last night, we get Bryan Danielson versus Bobby Fish. They only get 15 minutes. Another fantastic match. CM Punk is doing matches with young guys, kind of bringing them up a level and kind of showing them the ropes. His matches aren't blow you away fantastic. Here's her more CM Punk with a young guy just working a solid good match, because CM Punk was away from wrestling for 7 years. AEW is just firing on all cylinders lately. It is the most fun I'm having watching wrestling in a long time. And I love Ring of Honor. I love MLW. I love New Japan. But AEW, just every time I get done watching this show, I just feel real happy. Just real happy. It's a long time since WWE made me happy. Comic-wise, I'm using the slow time at work that I have to sit and wait for a call to read the stacks of graphic novels that I have here at my desk, which is why I was able to read Die. I've caught up on the 3 trade paperbacks of that. I am reading Fatale, which is the Sean Phillips and Brubaker series about mysticism and mystery and an immortal femme fatale set in Los Angeles throughout the 20th century. Oh, is it really, really good? Just so much good stuff in this stack here. And in the mail, I did get the Marvels. I really wish they'd put that into a trade paperback, because, boy, it deserves it. I haven't read it yet, but I just flipped through them when I got them. And the person who sold them to me on eBay did a good job packing them and everything. So I've been able to just kind of wallow in good comics. And that's really about it. I haven't had a lot of time for TV because even though we're not in our busy season at work, and I'm not busy when I'm at work for the office job, they need bodies because they don't have enough people trained and they don't have enough people who can work early and work late. So they're handing out overtime, and I have no problem with it. Hey, you want to pay me to sit and read graphic novels? Cool. Believe it or not, kids, you've listened to us blather on about funny books for an hour and a half.
Good for you.
And as we say every week, the comic we like the least, we still like better than the comic that you like the most. Joe?
Corey, what is E.T. short for?
Extraterrestrial, unless it's a porn movie based on E.T., and then it's the extra testicle.
No, he's short for because she's only got tiny legs.
Ah, I listen. I live for that song. Hit my music.
Done, bitches!